existential crisis. We are in a planetary emergency, and we are not going to stand by and let people lose their lives and livelihood and be forced to become climate refugees when we can do something.
So that's Greta Thunberg at The Hague. Peter, you also have been arrested protesting around climate change. And I wanted to end by asking about this Yellen meeting, Janet Yellen meeting in Beijing. It is said that one point of contention is China's production of green technologies like solar power, electric vehicles, and lithium batteries, Yellen refusing to rule out tariffs on Chinese green exports, despite Biden's declaring climate change an existential threat to the world. If you can weigh in on this.
You know, I remember a moment back when President Obama was elected to a second term. I wrote a letter to the New York Times saying this is a huge opportunity for the United States to take leadership on climate change and all the economic benefits, the jobs that will come from that. And instead, President Obama expanded the fossil fuel industry, and after his presidency, he bragged about expanding it. We should be looking for all sorts of ways to expand solar and wind and to end the fossil fuel industry. Those are two sides of the same coin. The harder side is actually ending fossil fuels. We should focus on that. But I don't care where solar, where wind comes from, where any of these solutions come from. We need all hands on deck right now. We should, a lot more of us should be getting arrested.
We have to leave it there. Climate activist, climate scientist. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
KBOO just finished our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We want to thank all of our supporters for helping us bring the community engaging, unique, and all-around fun special episodes and killer marathons. We wouldn't be able to do it without our listeners. And if you missed out on any of the programming, you can check out the list of specials at kboo.fm/thrills.
Hello, my name is Jeff, and I host a show entitled A Matter of Public Records that is broadcast on KBOO the second and fourth Saturdays of every month from 3 to 6 a.m. It is a somewhat eclectic show where the song choices are often instinctual, based on the prior song. Tune in and you might hear some instrumentals, some slightly avant-garde music, punk, post-punk, indie rock, jazz. To my ears, it is a classic late-night radio show. That's A Matter of Public Records, every second and fourth Saturday from 3 to 6 a.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members in the Portland Housing Bureau, announcing the opening of the North Northeast Preference Policy Homeownership Waitlist, helping longtime and displaced residents to purchase a home in their community. The application deadline is April 19th. Information for the Preference Policy Homeownership Waitlist at portland.gov/PHB.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the fight against Zenith Energy in Portland is set to heat up again as the DEQ opens a public review of a new air quality permit.
Environmental activists in Southern Oregon occupy old-growth trees in a tree sit protest against logging.
And in national news, the San Diego Catholic Church divests from fossil fuels.
Good evening. This is KBOO Evening News for Monday, April 8th, 2024. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Josh Salem. Fossil fuel giant Zenith Energy has a major expansion plan for Portland, even as they've promised to phase out crude oil storage and transport. Environmental activists and former Portland city leaders have opposed Zenith's expansion. They say the crude oil storage and rail transport that Zenith runs through Portland neighborhoods creates serious health and environmental risks. If the trains derail or the big earthquake hits, Zenith tanks are at risk of exploding. They also highlight Zenith's history of disregarding regulations, breaking promises, and lack of transparency. Zenith is applying for a new air quality permit, which regulates how much pollution the company is legally allowed to emit. It's all part of Zenith's plan to expand in Portland, where they say they will replace crude oil with renewable fuels. That includes things like ethanol, biofuel, renewable diesel, and plants and animal fats. Those fuels may release fewer pollutants into the air, but they have similar risks when it comes to spillage and explosions. On April 17th, the Department of Environmental Quality will hold an informational meeting about how the agency regulates Zenith. Later this spring, they'll launch a formal public review of the air quality permit.
Community activists in Southern Oregon have been engaged in a tree sit on Bureau of Land Management land near Grants Pass for a week now. They're perched high up in the trees, in a tent strung from the branches. They're protesting the Bureau of Land Management's Poor Windy Project, a timber sale that would allow an old-growth forest to be logged. Here's one of the forest defenders explaining their motivations.
We set up this tree sit to highlight the Bureau of Land Management's destructive logging practices, specifically their continued logging of mature and old-growth forests. So we're out here occupying a stand of ancient ponderosa pines and Douglas fir in the Poor Windy Timber Sale, which is just one unit of thousands of acres of mature and old-growth forest that's slated to be logged by the BLM.
It comes at a time when the Biden administration has committed to ending the practice of logging old-growth forests on public lands. But that rulemaking process is still in the works. George Sexton is a conservation director with Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands. He told the Capital Chronicle, quote, BLM is saying, we don't log old-growth trees. Well, they, the protesters, are sitting in old-growth trees that the BLM wants to log, end quote. The Poor Windy Project log 15,000 acres, about a third of which are mature and old-growth trees. These trees play an important role in combating climate change.
Protecting old-growth is crucial for mitigating climate change. Old-growth forests like these sequester huge amounts of carbon, both in the trees themselves and in the healthy soil and duff that they create. If these trees are cut, they'll be replaced with a monoculture of Douglas fir. This is not only bad for the climate, but is bad for local water quality due to the sedimentation and erosion that follows cutting, but also decreases local communities' resilience to a changing climate. As the climate warms, wildfires will become more frequent and more severe. But these trees that we're occupying are highly fire resistant, and the logging will create more young, homogeneous forests with ladder fuels, which will increase the severity of wildfires and put locals at risk.
Forest defenders have been tree sitting on the Poor Windy plot since April 1st. Studies have shown that Oregon's forests are some of the most carbon-rich in the world, and that logging is a state's single biggest source of carbon emissions.
The Diocese of San Diego announced it has divested from fossil fuels, a first for a Catholic diocese in the United States. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
The Diocese of San Diego has divested its financial holdings from the fossil fuel industry, the first Catholic diocese in the United States to make a move like this public. The effort began in 2021 to eliminate all direct investments in fossil fuels and reduce indirect holdings through mutual funds to 3% of its portfolio. Jose Aguto, who recently stepped down as the leader of the nonprofit Catholic Climate Covenant, says the guidance came straight from the Vatican.
Pope Francis signaled quite clearly that we need to move away from fossil fuel production. So our Catholic institutions have a moral obligation to heed that call. Divestment needs to be part of that strategy.
Pope Francis has repeatedly called for an end to the era of fossil fuels in the face of climate change and promotes stewardship of the environment and natural resources. More than 350 Catholic institutions outside the U.S. have announced divestment commitments. Christina Bagalio Slentz, the San Diego Diocese's Associate Director for Creation Care, says she hopes other American Catholic groups will follow suit.
Pope Benedict XVI says all purchasing is a moral act, so we have to think about the way that our financial behavior has an impact around the world.
The United States is both the global leader in fossil fuel production and the largest historical source of planet-heating greenhouse gas emissions. This story was produced with original reporting from Brian Rowe for Earthbeat, a project of National Catholic Reporter. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Portland is updating its tree management plan for the first time in 20 years and is asking for public input about what the plan should include. Things have changed since the last update, both politically and in the local climate. Portland experienced a deadly heat wave in 2021 and has seen hotter and drier summers generally. Trees are important to help keeping neighborhoods cool, but Portland has an unequal distribution of trees. Areas of East Portland in particular lack trees, and as a result, they trap heat and don't properly cool off at night during hot spells. Adina Long is director of Portland Parks and Recreation. She said in a statement that a new plan will allow the city to, quote, equitably and sustainably grow the urban forest, ensuring the benefits of a healthy tree canopy are realized by all Portlanders, end quote. The public can comment via an online survey on the Parks and Rec webpage and or attend an open house event on the evening of April 24th at McDaniel High School in Northeast Portland. The tree planting and care became politicized in the past few years in Portland when Commissioner Mingus Mapp's Bureau of Environmental Services and Commissioner Carmen Rubio's Parks and Recreation Department competed for control of urban forestry. And this winter, the city faced backlash when they initially continued to charge homeowners a tree removal fee after trees came down during the ice storm.
Data from new satellite-based technology show that the amount of methane pollution impacting communities living near oil and gas facilities is far greater than previously estimated. As Lori Anderson with the group Moms Clean Air Force explains, when methane is released into the air through venting, flaring, or leaks, toxic co-pollutants that have been linked to serious respiratory and other health impacts are also released.
And these co-pollutants include particulate matter. They can include VOCs, which are carcinogenic. So there's these health impacts that are absolutely impacting our children and impacting our elderly and our most sensitive populations the most.
Levels of fine particulate matter were up to 15 times higher, sulfur dioxides were twice as high, and nitrogen oxides were 22% higher than previous estimates. Oil and gas groups have argued that venting and flaring methane, the primary component of natural gas, are necessary because there aren't enough pipelines to divert that gas to market. Health costs for people living downwind, including hospitalizations and premature death, amount to more than $7 billion each year. Low-income Hispanic and Native American communities are disproportionately impacted. Methane is over 80 times more potent than CO2 at trapping heat in the atmosphere. Anderson says limiting pollution can also help address more frequent and powerful wildfires, prolonged drought, and other impacts of a changing climate.
We're already experiencing the impacts of climate change, and we really, really need to do something now to slow those impacts. And if we're going to meet our deadline, we absolutely have to start cutting back on the amount of methane that is being reduced into our atmosphere immediately. We can't wait any longer.
Colorado is the fourth largest oil-producing state and the eighth largest gas producer in the nation. Nearly 290,000 Coloradans, including over 39,000 children, live within a half-mile threat radius of active oil and gas operations. The EPA's new methane rule aims to address pollution from routine venting and flaring, but Anderson says strong enforcement will be critical to protecting public health.
Cocoa farming and illegal gold mining are driving the rapid destruction of Ghana's forests. But one group leads tree plantings to combat deforestation. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Ghana, forests are being cut down at a rapid rate, driven largely by cocoa farming and illegal gold mining.
Large tracts of forests are destroyed, ripping the belly of the earth in search of gold and other minerals.
Nana Yao Osei-Darkwa leads the Green Republic Project, a grassroots organization in Ghana. He says trees help clean and cool the air, create wildlife habitat, soak up water, and reduce storm runoff. And they help limit global warming because they absorb and store carbon dioxide as they grow. So his group goes to high schools and colleges to teach students about the benefits that trees provide and lead tree planting projects. who says since 2018, the Green Republic Project has helped plant about 165,000 seedlings in Ghana. It's a tiny fraction of what the country needs to make up for the deforestation it suffered in the past, and that continues to this day. But educating young people and getting them involved with tree planting can help instill a love for trees and a determination to support larger-scale solutions.
And so once you do the education, they become ambassadors to ensure that trees are protected.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy, with a low of 43. Tomorrow, those clouds continue, with a high of 62. Making history today in 2024, a total solar eclipse takes place at the moon's ascending node, visible across North America. The quote of the day is from William Ellery Channing, Unitarian preacher and spokesperson, who said, "There are seasons in human affairs of inward and outward revolution, when new depths seem to be broken up in the soul, when new wants are unfolded in multitudes, and a new and undefined good is thirsted for. There are periods when to dare is the highest wisdom."
The process for correcting ballot errors is set to become easier this year, thanks to a bill passed in Olympia this session. Lawmakers unanimously approved Senate Bill 5890, which aims to reduce ballot rejection rates because of issues like mismatched signatures. Jasmine Smith is with the Washington Bus, a youth voting organization.
There's a lot of different areas that 5890 is going to standardize the process across Washington to ensure that we're counting every voter.
The new law ensures better outreach for the ballot curing process, including notifying voters by text message or email, if possible, about issues with their ballot. The bill goes into effect on June 6th, ahead of this year's election. Smith says Washington rejects ballots from people of color and young people at a higher rate than others.
When people turn in their ballot and they want to have their voice heard, they're going to be heard, and we can maintain the security of our elections while also not disproportionately impacting communities of color and not counting their vote.
The legislation also establishes a work group to create a uniform ballot envelope design for all counties in the state by the 2026 primary election.
Senate Republicans seek new leadership. Many want less separation of church and state. And President Biden says the Port of Baltimore could be back up and running next month. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think the Senate is broken, and it really hasn't been functioning as the world's greatest deliberative body, which historically people have thought of it that way.
Texas Senator John Cornyn hopes to get a chance to improve the working of the Senate if he can replace outgoing Republican leader Mitch McConnell. Cornyn and Minority Whip John Thune are the only declared candidates, though others are rumored. McConnell's fundraising might be hard to replace. The longest party leader in Senate history raised more than $1 billion since 2015. New data from Pew confirms Republicans are twice as likely than Democrats to say the Bible should influence U.S. laws. Some politicians, including Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, argue it would be good. But Rob Boston, with Americans United for Separation of Church and State, says what's known as Christian nationalism is corrosive.
We've seen examples of this play out in states like Texas and Florida, where there's a lot of book banning, where LGBTQ rights are being attacked, where reproductive rights are being assailed.
ProPublica reports former President Donald Trump received a proposal to back his full $500 million civil bond. Billionaire Don Hanke would have let Trump put up cash and real estate as collateral, but Trump's lawyers may have violated ethics rules by not alerting New York's appeals court of the deal, which Trump didn't take. As some states make it harder to vote, others are making it easier. In Washington state, which votes by mail, lawmakers recently passed a bill to cut ballot rejection rates for things like a mismatched signature. Jasmine Smith is with youth voter group, the Washington Bus.
When people turn in their ballot and they want to have their voice heard, they're going to be heard. And we can maintain the security of our elections while also not disproportionately impacting communities of color and not counting their vote.
Vasectomies are on the rise since the Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade. A 2023 report shows requests for consultations are up by a third, with men reassessing the reproductive landscape. Dr. Jill Gibson is with Planned Parenthood Arizona.
And so I do think that that is part and parcel of the whole picture of how we have to look at bodily autonomy and access to reproductive health care and sexual health care, is that if we continue to have all of these regulations and restrictions, we won't have providers to provide this service at all.
President Joe Biden was in Baltimore last week to announce federal grants to help Baltimore pull the Francis Scott Key Bridge from the Patapsco River. While there, he gave an update on the port's reopening.
Our team has been able to clear two small channels for essential ships helping clear the wreckage. And yesterday, the Army Corps announced that by the end of April, they'll be able to open the third channel for some commercial traffic, including car carriers. And by the end of May, we'll open the full channel.
A co-defendant in Trump's Georgia case is threatening Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis with legal action if she doesn't recuse herself. A Christian legal organization's petition for Willis to recuse herself also reached more than 40,000 signatures. House Republicans introduced a bill to rename Washington Dulles Airport after former President Trump, but Democrats have countered with legislation to rename a Miami Federal Corrections Facility after him, saying that's more suitable. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Two South Dakota tribes are raising concerns about a Rapid City women's health clinic. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two Western South Dakota tribes are giving a Rapid City-based women's health clinic a month to turn around its program. The Native American-centered prenatal care clinic in question has seen zero patients since last April. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Rosebud and Cheyenne River Sioux tribal officials are giving the Oglala Sioux Tribe and Native Women's Health Clinic until May 4th to implement a corrective action plan, staff the clinic, and start seeing patients again. All three tribes contract with the federal government to provide prenatal and women's health care for tribal members in Rapid City. The Oglala Sioux Tribe administers the program. Oglala Sioux Tribe President Frank Starr comes out, says the tribe has addressed the Native Women's Health Clinic.
That situation's been handled, and it'll be monitored from here on out. We have definitely we did address that, and that's probably, it'll be handled by the Oglala Sioux Tribe for now.
Starr comes out says the intention is for the tribe to still run the clinic going forward. A report last year found the number of healthcare visits quickly decreased over 3 years, down to zero since last April. Patients are being referred elsewhere, including to an Oyate Health Center midwife located a floor below the clinic. Rosebud Sioux Tribe President Scott Herman said the tribe is considering moving its share of funding to cover women's health to Oyate Health Center. Herman says the tribe needs to do what is in the best interest of tribal members living in Rapid City.
Because it can cause some problems. We can be liable for anything that could happen to them because we're not providing that service for them. Something happens as far as their pregnancy or a miscarriage or something like that. That comes into play. So those kind of issues that will come up if we don't address it.
Some estimate the lack of services affects anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 enrolled Native women living near the Black Hills. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
On-site counseling will be offered at Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas this week. This follows Friday's announcement by police that Haskell student and actor Cole Brings Plenty was found deceased. The Haskell community and the greater Kansas City Native community were hoping for his safe return after he went missing on March 31st. Community events have been taking place on campus since last week to hold space and offer support. A candlelight vigil was held over the weekend. Morningstar Counseling, which will be on campus Monday and Tuesday, says its services for students, faculty, and staff are to help address grief and loss. Police say Brings Plenty was found in a wooded area in Johnson County late Friday morning. Police say the investigation is ongoing and are not providing further details. The Lawrence, Kansas Police Department was seeking his arrest in connection to an alleged domestic violence incident. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe in South Dakota released a statement Friday saying Brings Plenty is a citizen of the tribe and that the tribe is offering its deepest sympathy and support to his family and friends. The statement goes on to say the tribe is demanding a full and thorough investigation into Brings Plenty's disappearance and death, and that the tribe's attorney general will be in contact with Kansas authorities. His family released a statement Friday thanking people for their support and asked for privacy as they grieve. Brings Plenty's disappearance and subsequent death not only impacted the greater Kansas City Native community, but people across Indian country have been offering their support. An online campaign asks his supporters to wear braids on Monday in his honor, but also to raise awareness of the missing and murdered Indigenous Peoples Movement. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Reproductive rights advocates in Nevada say two upcoming abortion-related Supreme Court cases present various threats, no matter whether one supports or is against abortion. Alice Gonzalez has more in Carson City.
Nevada reproductive rights advocates are breaking down the importance of two looming Supreme Court abortion cases. In Moyle v. United States, access to the abortion drug mifepristone could be restricted, and in Idaho v. United States, federal law known as the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, or EMTALA, for short, could be upended. It requires hospitals to provide care in serious emergency situations that could warrant an abortion. Alexis Salt is a Las Vegas-based teacher who experienced a difficult pregnancy herself and gave birth to a severely premature daughter. She says she was able to receive the care she needed and wanted, but is sharing her experience to shine light on the importance of abortion in life-threatening situations, which she says is currently at stake.
When you are pregnant, it can absolutely 100% kill you. It almost killed me. And so when people, particularly men, tell you that this is what your body's supposed to do, don't worry about it, you can't listen to that.
The Alliance Defending Freedom is a conservative organization representing the state of Idaho and says when the Supreme Court overturned Roe, it returned the issue of abortion to individual states, allowing pro-life policies to be passed. It contends that the Biden administration is misusing federal law to override state law and allow abortions to be conducted. The Supreme Court will hear the case on April 24th. Margarita Jorge is executive director of the grassroots healthcare advocacy organization Healthcare for America Now. She says she's by no means a legal expert, but adds that the Supreme Court justices are unpredictable and worries about the actions the conservative majority on the high court could take with these two high-stakes cases.
We have seen this court reverse past precedent. We have seen them rule on things that roll back all kinds of functions and features of government. We have seen them time and time again take the wrong side or use these court cases as an opportunity to impose their own ideology.
Jorge says there's a lot more work to do to make abortion health care, which she contends impacts everyone from pro-life to pro-choice. She says the biggest challenge will be for people to see abortion in that light and get it out of the political sphere. For Nevada News Service, I'm Alex Gonzalez.
It's been 3 months since someone won the Powerball jackpot. Now, its $1.3 billion jackpot will be claimed by someone who bought their ticket in Northeast Portland. The ticket had to have all six matching numbers in order to win. The person who bought the ticket has a year to come forward to claim the prize. They won't get the full sum, though, when accounting for taxes and a different payout methods. Winners receive a larger portion of the jackpot overall if they take the money paid out annually for the next 30 years. If they take the money all at once, they'll receive $621 million. 45 states plus Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands play Powerball, and this was the eighth largest prize in U.S. history. Oregon Lottery Director Mike Wells wrote in a statement, quote, "I want to congratulate the winner on this life-changing moment. No one in Oregon has ever won a prize on this scale," end quote.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Monday, April 8th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Barbara Bernstein and Chris Gao. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegetoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Suzanne Potter, Alex Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Danny Shy. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for the Coast Range Radio.
From the Coast Range Association, this is Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. So we often think of the land and the sea as separate worlds that have little to do with each other, but that barrier is much more fluid and interconnected than many people realize. We've talked on this program before about what folks call the land-sea connection, and today we're going to talk about the connection piece of that equation, estuaries. Estuaries are where the land and sea meet and intermingle and can be some of the most productive ecosystems in the world. So to talk all about the campaign to protect and restore Oregon's estuaries, I am so excited to be joined by Annie Merrill of Oregon Shores. Annie Merrill, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much. Happy to be here. Thank you for that lovely intro.
Well, thank you for joining me. Let's start off with just kind of the high-level overview. What is an estuary and why are they